Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hallam, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt, and it's that time once again! We're covering three Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons. We only do this every so often, but we love doing it whenever we do, because we get to just talk about gags all the time, and it's great. And
yeah,
it's fun.
And it couldn't come at a better time for Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah.
This year is the 75th anniversary of the character's creation. This isn't that episode. We actually have an episode planned a little bit later.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do
that. So stay tuned for that. Yeah. But also, has a movie.
Yeah. Might come out. You never know.
It might come out. The director of that movie knows who we are now.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. The status of Coyote versus Acme is a lot like the status of Pedro Pascal. It might come out, but only if the studio is okay with it.
Fantastic.
It came to me in the moment, and I'm like, you got to do it.
Fantastic. Yeah, today we're looking at three Wile E. Coyote cartoons. Three time-spanning Wile E. Coyote cartoons. Like, usually when we do these episodes, they're within like 2 or 3 years of each other. Maybe we'll skip like 5 years and cover a 60 short. This is a kind of time-winding episode because we got one from the 50s, one from the very late 90s, and then we got one from the early 2000s.
Yeah. No, these span 50-odd years. We have only one from the Golden Age, and we have basically some more contemporary attempts to revive the spirit of the originals, and some went well and some didn't. But yeah, this is not just our usual three from the 50s and 60s Wile E one. It's like, okay, let's do one from the 50s and then some other ones from a little sooner. So that's pretty cool.
So, what's the first one we're covering today?
I can't say what the first one is, because I don't think you've named what they are.
Oh, that's right. So, the shorts we're covering today are... Our Guided Muscle... Shit. Our Guided Muscle, followed by Little Goat Beef, ending with Wizard of Ow.
They're like vampires, Mark. They can't come into the episode until you invite them. And you invite them by saying which ones are in this episode.
Saying which ones they are. Exactly. Yeah.
So now I can go into mine. I'm like, because usually what will happen in the past
fair,
is...
To be fair, Jorn, I want you to go into it because it's a really good one.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's really good. Oh my God, I love this one.
I want to cover it right now. It's so damn good.
I wonder what we thought of it. Yeah, I wonder if it's any good. No, it's really good, guys.
Oh my God.
It's really good. Guided Muscle. Oh, this one's great. This came out on December 10th, 1955. On this day, Garth Smith, the bassist for the 70s proto-punk rock band The Buzzcocks, best known for their song Ever Fallen in Love, born on this day.
All right, very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Exactly. This was directed by Chuck Jones and written by Michael Maltese. This is something that I found very fascinating. This was one of the three cartoons featured on the final episode of ABC's The Bugs Bunny and Tweety Show on September 2nd, 2000. So when they wrapped it up, they used Guided Muscle, they used The Greyhounded Hare, and they used Tugboat Granny. So this was the best of the three on that day.
Yeah. And that was also, I believe that's the last syndicated Looney Tunes show on ABC, because then they would become Cartoon Network exclusive, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because ABC and CBS had theirs in the 80s and 90s and 2000s. And then that sort of came to a halt because Cartoon Network was like, hey, we're going to take these. And so,
yeah,
you know, that was why it was a big deal when we covered
it. Which, to be 100% fair, at least when they did that, they took good care of them. It's like, this is ours now. Put them in the box. Like, yeah. No. It's like,
let's curate them and air them.
Here's programming blogs. Here's education shit. It was a good time.
It was anyway. Great. Oh my God. But yeah, so this one is one that was on the legendary second Golden Collection disc with all the Wile E cartoons. This is a great one. We've been wanting to do this one for a while, I think. So I have always enjoyed the opening of this cartoon where, because we usually go right into it where it's, you know, we go right into, we see the Roadrunner, we see the coyote, and we have proof of concept gag. But here we have an extended opening gag involving Wile E. Coyote, where we get a glimpse of his cooking routine, where he's fixing something on the stove pot and he's adding salt and pepper and seasoning to it. And I love this is just a drawn out cooking setup to reveal that he's seasoning a tin can. That's the only food he has. And he's so desperate, he's cutting it with a fork and knife. I love the expression he has to us, just like, what am I doing? What has my life become? I like that.
Great,
it's a very simple
expression work throughout this cartoon.
Oh, throughout.
That's just the first one.
Oh my God, there's so many great ones in this. But yeah, obviously, the Roadrunner into the paper. What I like to do is I write down the Latin names. The coyote is Oedibus almost anythingus, and Roadrunner is Velocitus delectibus. That works. What happens is he's bowled over by the Roadrunner. I love the image of Wile E springing back up with his legs twisted over his torso, and then him gazing upon the Roadrunner and just having this very, very happy expression, and then licking his lips as you hear the, like, a xylophone traversing, like just going back and forth over the xylophone.
Just smiling, and it's so good.
Yeah, by the way, I'll get into why I think this later, but I would say the MVP of this cartoon is the xylophonist. The xylophonist has the single most important role in this movie, in this cartoon. Because I mentioned the xylophonist multiple times in this.
You know what? That's good, because it gives me, the editor, reasons to actually put cartoon audio in this one.
Yes. No, you're going to need a lot of xylophone stuff in this.
I will. Oh, man. Our xylophone budget's going through the roof on this one.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm just going to be just moving a giant xylophone into the house. All right, boys. Put it next to the recording equipment.
Well, you see, Jordan, that's why Coyote's Acme is so expensive to produce. They blew half the budget on xylophones.
God damn it.
We can ask Dave Green now. We can ask him that. Like, hey, how many xylophones?
What was the xylophone budget on Coyote vs. Acme, Dave? Normal. Why do you ask? Well, you see in this cartoon, and it just turns into a comic book.
We got a theory.
Oh, my God. But yeah, pretty simple proof of concept gag, you know. But and so we get into the regular gags. The arrowhead cactus gag is simple, but it just works, which is what I'm going to say about a lot of these, is that it's simple, but it just works. Like, because he just, you know, he propels himself in a bow as like a flying arrow and then runs into a cactus and sort of is... falls off the cliff. And I love that we just hear the crash without he actually having to look down the cliff and see him fall. You just hear, I love that. Now, this slingshot gag, pretty classic. Like, it's a classic physics does not enact itself until the exact moment it would make the coyote look the funniest gag. Where, you know, he cuts the rope, he's waiting for the little rubber band to spring. And throw him over, and you see him inspect the, you know, like okay, how it works, like, you know, okay, move a hander, and then you just hear in the background again the xylophonist just said this little like, and the moment where Wile E sticks his head in out from under it, and you just hear. That is, again, the xylophonist is the king here. Because that doesn't work as well unless you have the little, just the xylophone represents the curiosity of just like the. So good. So good. And
from the makers of Exactly.
Yeah. Again, the Milt Franklin Carl Stelling orchestras at this point, they could do no wrong. And I wonder what long tradition they would have of making great cartoon music. Cut to 5 years later.
You know, the one thing I do kind of have to give you credit for is your impression of the Bill Lava music. It kind of sounds like the music from SpongeBob. No, like that kind of goes into like, well, the people who made SpongeBob kind of grew up in those 70s, 80s cartoons where that kind of music style was prevalent. So you come with the argument there that there may be a little bit of influence.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, because I know a lot of the music in SpongeBob, I don't know the exact track you're referring to, but a lot of the music in SpongeBob was like stock music that was available, and a lot of that was...
I think I was briefly inferring Spanish Flea for a moment there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was basically a cheesier version of Spanish Flea.
You're saying it is... All right, sorry.
And I was thinking of the Homer Simpson.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think tacky music and whatever comes to mind, and then that's Bill Lava. But
yeah, pretty much, yeah.
You know, it's also... I think of that, and I think of the Sanford and Son theme. I think...
Also used in a Simpsons episode.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I just wanted to tell you, yeah, you're awful. Goodbye. This is completely off topic. The thing I do where it's like all the Best Picture nominees with Who's Line clips? Somebody did one of those with 30 Rock clips. And for Maestro, they included a bit where it was a orchestra dramatically playing the theme from Sanford and Son.
Now who's in charge?
I'm like, what the fuck is this? I don't need context for this. This is incredible.
Yeah, that.
Da-da-da-da. Yeah, I just think tacky music with Bill, you know. Just you know, anything that like I could just picture Cool Cat and the Colonel Rimfire in front. Oh dear, he's got my thing. Yeah. I'm going to, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but yeah. Also, the end of this gag, the brief moment where Wiley tries to get up and gives up because they're very good in this era of keeping the shot wide enough to make him look silly. And so in that one where you just see him like. The canon gag here is simple, where it just, you know, throws him back.
Oh, it's so good. Just the throwback's funny enough, but it's Wiley coming around the corner, look at the cannon, just...
I love that. That's great. Just woozily stepping out of the cannon. These next two are basically kind of conjoined in a way, where we have the swing weight tree gag, where... He swings a weight and then it hits a tree and the tree hits him and then so just him looking at the tree as it comes down on him. And then the sequel where he rolls the weight and it rolls in a circle and then bam, keeping the shot wide again.
Oh, what I love about that one is the camera.
Yeah.
And it's like it rolls down, and then you see the full frame, and then the camera just slowly pans out to reveal it's gonna round about and hit him.
Oh my god!
It's so good.
So good. So my favorite gag in this cartoon is this next one, the grease gag. because you think it's going one place, because you think he's gonna set up this grease thing, and of course, you know, okay, he's gonna slip on it somehow, but. I love that the gag doesn't end with Wiley getting hit by a truck. Because typically that's the end of the gag. You set something up and then you hit Wiley with a truck. But no, he slips trying to get away from the truck. And then the Roadrunner shows up, passes him. And then you have this wonderful sequence where where Wiley tries to run as hard as he can on the grease only to slip and fall. And what makes this so good is every time he falls, the orchestra gives a beautiful hit. Things like that, just the flourish is there. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Just the end of it where his little eyes peer at us through the pile of grease. That's great. Ugh. I'm sorry. So the next one, the cliff swing gag. Perfect expectation subversion is, you know, okay, he's gonna run into something, obviously. What's he gonna run into? Surprise! Another cliff immediately below. You're not expecting that. Okay, a lot of good pieces to this next one, which is the TNT fishing rod gag with a bird seed set up down low. Because, first of all, again, more of the orchestra being the MVP. The little violin chuckle as Wiley thinks about the TNT fishing rod is great. You just hear the violin.
I love that. Especially going into my short, where we kind of see the origins of this. I feel like this idea of just Wiley going like, hey, this could actually work.
Yeah.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is kind of a simple gag where, you know, the fishing, you know, he lowers the TNT and as the roadrunner's eating the birdseed, and the spark just travels all the way up the fishing wire and down to Wiley and then into the barrel of TNT. And our favorite reaction image, I think, of the year is going to be the look of Wiley's panicked face before the whole barrel of TNT explodes.
It's so good.
It's like a Squidward
expression. It's a perfect... It's there for like 5 seconds, but it's so good.
Yeah, it's so good. It's the sequel to Daffy's expression after, well, no, I haven't seen a wabbit at all. Oh, God. I love that one. Just to starting the next gag with the celebrated Acme novel, How to Tar and Feather a Roadrunner, 10th printing.
Listen, I saw this photo in the Discord last night.
I said it in the Discord because a couple of our friends have a running gag involving tarring and feathering people.
Let's not go into that in any more detail at all.
No, it's not a sex thing. It's not a sex thing, Mark. That's not one of your usual Urban Dictionary things from the 90s. It's just funny when you tar... My friend Christian has gags involving tarring and feathering people, shoving people in a vat of eels.
Okay.
Other bizarre fucking sleep paralysis shit like that.
So what you're saying, Jordan, is that Christian loves Wile E. Coyote cartoons because all that shit shows up in Wile E. Coyote cartoons.
I don't see why he wouldn't love Wile E. Coyote cartoons.
Anyways, I love that it's a 10th edition because that insinuates there were nine other editions that just didn't get it right. They're like, darn. We messed up the mechanics in this one.
Kicking it back to the publisher and going, I swear, we got to get it right this time. You've given it to us nine times.
This one.
Nine times. But I swear we've got it. I don't know. You didn't have it the other nine. But this time we have enough in there that could give someone the idea to properly tar and feather a roadrunner. I'm not certain this will work. I don't know why. I don't want to make 10 more copies of this, man. We're publishers. We have other books to do. Come on.
Yeah, like how long to give someone until they lay an egg? The answer may surprise you.
Yes, and how to induce a person to fall off a cliff.
Oh, man.
So
we more messed up books and animation, man.
I love animation because of that.
Oh man! Oh,
so man. I love that because obviously, you know, he sets up the tar and feather machine. towards the road, and Roadrunner goes so fast that the machine turns around and shoots Wily with the tar and feather. And I love that when it shoots out at Wily, we don't even see it at first. We just hear a hit, and we hold on the outside of the cliff face for maybe 5 seconds of just so we can imagine what he looks like, pretty much. Yeah. And the eventual shot of the tarred and feathered Wily. And for the record, that's spelled T-A-R-R-E-D, not the other way. So the shot of him covered in feathers is really silly. And Roadrunner just comes around saying, oh, Roadrunners already have feathers. Doing the actually.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's actually a good actually. It's like, yeah, he has feathers.
It's like, what am I going to do with this? Well, you didn't think it through.
Now I'm covered in oil.
What's next? Am I going to get thrown in a vat of eels?
Or snakes? I don't know.
Or snakes. Sure. No, that's in a couple, actually.
Yeah.
So, this ending pothole gag. First of all, because he feels this pothole with explosive and then has the bird seed on top of it, I think, and then is going to, wire it to, a match and then, explode the pothole. And I love the little one-second shot from behind a rock of the very tiny Wily head looking out at the filled-in pothole, where he says, already, the Roadrunner's coming, and just pops up for 1 second, and then pops back in. I love that. He loves his work. The gag in itself is pretty classic, pretty standard, where, it's his want to grab the Roadrunner completely outdoes his want to avoid the explosion, so he literally runs over the pothole the second it explodes. And, just stands there all gray.
Great expression of blown up Wily, just looking at the audience, just covered in brittle. It's like, it's so good.
It is. And I absolutely love this I give up ending, where he puts a sign up that says, wanted, one gullible coyote, apply to the manager of this theater. Which is absolutely genius. Like, all right, you assholes, you do it. And then after he's given that a good 5 seconds so the audience can read it, he just slides the that's all folks along. Which I love.
That's why I love whenever Looney Tunes go meta. And two, I love how it's always like the Wile E. Coyote one. It's that. It's Roadrunner spelling out that's all folks in the sand before it transitions over in that one cartoon.
Yes.
Just, I love that Wile E. Coyote gives himself just meta contextualization and it works.
Because that's a rare cartoon where you can literally have a character going, okay, that's enough. Let's end the cartoon now. Thanks. I've been blown up enough times. Please cut to the credits.
And now your feature presentation. And it's like a World War II epic or something. I don't know. It's like a really depressing.
All right. Great.
Okay. I think I'm fine of Nazis now. Can I go home?
I feel like that would be a Wile E. Coyote cartoon ending where he just goes, I want to go home. And then it just ends. Can we please, like, in mid-gag, it's like, okay, we know how this is going to end. Can I just go home now and black out? Oh, my God. I have no notes. This is incredible all the way through. One of the best pictures of this specific era of Roadrunner Wile E. cartoons. Every gag works. Nothing needs to be over-explained. So much makes me laugh. You can see it's very much at the tip of the bluer era of Wile E. Coyote cartoons and right before the real yellow deserts. Like, this is the cusp of the original era of them, and it's some of them at their best, and just the best gag work, the best of all of this. I adore this one.
Yeah, dude, like, I was watching this short last night, not even to take notes, just to watch it, because you were sending me the images from it, and I'm like,
I was having a ball.
I gotta watch this, and I was laughing so giddily. So giddily, man. It was just unbridled joy watching this cartoon. And it still is today, man. It's such a great representation of Wile E. Coyote, man. It's so good. It's great.
So fucking
good. Watch it. It's a damn good cartoon.
It's, oh my God. I give this a 5 out of 5 because why would I even insinuate there's anything wrong with this one?
Yeah, same.
Ooh, yeah.
Sam, I'm also giving this a 5 out of 5 anvils. It's so, so much fun.
Oh my God.
So damn good.
All right.
So.
Cut forward 45 years.
Yeah. We jump ahead 45 years to the next short called Little Go Beep. Came out on April 7th, 2000. On this day, the first, John, you'd love this, the first regular MLB game at Enron Field, now Minute Maid Park in Houston, Texas, occurred on that day. The game, now, do you know who played that game?
It was, oh God, Astros, Cardinals? I don't know.
More local, Phillies.
Oh, the Phillies were in town. All right, cool. I knew it was an NL team because that was back when the Astros were still in the National League.
And they beat the Astros 4-1.
In 2000? All right, cool.
And the first person to do a home run at the Texas baseball stadium. A Philly. Third baseman Scott Rolen hit the first homer at the new park.
Scott Rolen! Hall of Famer Scott Rolen. The Philly fans hate him because he essentially asked to be traded out of Philly. But he's great.
Oh! Where did he go? And was he successful?
Why, yes. After a couple of years, he asked to be traded, essentially. He was traded to the St. Louis Cardinals and won one World Series ring with them.
Oh, okay.
But he went to... His biggest season was, I think, 2000. Where he had a colossal season and helped them go to the World Series that year. They were defeated by the Boston Red Sox, who had never won before. Or who hadn't won since the 1918.
I remember that game. Yeah, because... Yeah, well, I remember that game because of the movie Fever Pitch, which was made around that game. So, yeah, that's how I know about it.
I mean, funniest thing about that is that the whole shtick... The whole thing about that movie during production was that it was about how the Red Sox always lose. It wasn't in the script for that to be about the year they won. So they had to sort of go with reality and rewrite the film to be about the Red Sox winning the World Series in 2004.
In regards to music, because this is 2000 and we were alive.
Yes.
Number one song in the U.S. was Maria Maria by Santana featuring the product G&B.
Ladies and gents, turn up your sound system to the sound of Carlos Santana in the G&B product. Getaway Blues from the refugee camp.
And the number one song in the UK was Fool Again by Westlife.
Oh, okay. Advantage Santana.
Yeah.
It's not hard. What would I rather listen to? Carlos Santana or Westlife? Santana.
Little Go Beep was directed by Spike Brandt. Just Spike Brandt. Not with Tony Simone. Just Spike Brandt.
He did this his own.
Written by Earl Kress and Kathleen Helbaby Shipley.
Yeah.
There is a lot of background information. I'm going to be as concise as possible for this one.
All right.
So, this short is the only appearance of Wile E. Coyote's father, Cage E. Coyote, who's voiced by Stan Freberg. This was also Richard Stone's final musical collaboration before his death in 2001. Really unfortunate. This is also the last theatrically released Looney Tunes cartoon until Coyote Falls in 2010. And if wondering... what movie it played in front of. In theaters, I don't believe it actually played in front of anything, but it was previewed in L.A. in November with the film Best in Show.
Oh, okay, great.
For a Best Picture nomination.
Awesome.
I don't believe it got that nomination, but
I don't think so either.
It's a guest movie.
But, like, a Best in Show is great. I love Best in Show. You know?
Yeah.
No problems there.
Yeah, and this cartoon... was made in collaboration with the Warner Consumer Division because it was made under the label of the Baby Looney Tunes brand, which was starting to launch around this time.
Yeah.
It's amazing what 4 years makes to a marketing initiative.
Sure.
Because, okay, so originally what the plan was, and the writer of this cartoon, who unfortunately passed away in 2011, Earl Kress, did do a large write-up on his blog about the making of this movie. And essentially what happened was Kathleen was with, you know, had this idea to do these kind of like loony educational production. I believe the plan was to make a direct-to-video feature-length Baby Looney Tunes sort of thing, where there's three shorts made by different directors, and they combine them together to make, like, Baby Looney Tunes the movie, essentially is what they're going to do. And they were, and I don't know what exactly happened, but things changed. Spike Brand's Little Go Peep short was the only one that got fully produced and made. What's kind of crazy about Little Go Peep is that for a supposed direct-to-video short idea, they gave this to the Warner Feature Animation Division, man, because the animation in this short...
It's really nice.
It's really, really good. This is, if they made a Looney Tunes movie in the late 90s, early 2000s, this is what it would have looked like. And it looks amazing.
Yeah.
And another interesting background about this cartoon is that until very recently, folks, I've noticed Spike Brandt's on Twitter now. He's under... Yeah, so he's under Skull Island Productions at Skull Island Prod. So if you want to follow Looney Tunes director and, like, see some cool behind-the-scenes stuff and some Looney Tunes behind-the-scenes, I mean, he's posting a lot about, the Duck Dodgers movie that was going to happen, that turned into a TV show. So some Tom, like the early 2000s, like Tom and Jerry did direct-to-video movies, as well as the 2010s one, because that's predominantly what he's been doing nowadays, is predominantly those Tom and Jerry meat movies they would like to make fun of all the time. I cannot wait until he gets to cover the Willy Wonka one, because I think we all want to see the pencil drawings of messed up Willy Wonka, which is the world demands to know, Spike. Anyways, so for a couple weeks, Spike just went through, hey, here's some Little Go Beep knowledge, and the heads of Wiley and Roadrunner show up at the beginning and ending of this cartoon are the last ever cell-drawn Looney Tune moment. Like, that's the last one of it, because this cartoon is, it looks hand-drawn, but, like, I guess it was digitally inked or what have you. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And also what's interesting is he posted a picture of a cassette tape that had the auditions of all the voice actors who auditioned to play KG Coyote. Now, from an outside perspective, us being Looney Tunes fans, we're like, oh, of course they got Stan Freberg. He's part of the family. He's Looney Tunes royalty. But no, there were other people who are going to be it. And I'm just going to read through the list of people that were going to potentially have a couple of lines in a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah.
So, we have here Daryl Coelho, Jim Ward, Carlos Alazraki, Crocker, and Mark Hamill.
That would have been wild.
Michael Bell.
Okay.
Alan Oppenheimer.
Yeah, okay.
Bill Farmer.
Yorsh!
Listen, technically, Bill's also part of the Looney family playing Sylvester and doing a good job with it, so that could happen. Charlie Kimbrough.
Okay, he was one of the gargoyles in Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah. Jeff Bennett.
Good.
Michael Gorge. John O'Hurley, which...
Jay Peterman as Wile E. Coyote's dad, sure.
David Ogden Stiers.
David Ogden Stiers. Wow, that would have been cool.
Yeah, from Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah.
And, of course, Joe Alaski.
Yeah.
Because, of course. Yeah. Well, all these auditions, they're like, no, get a Stan. And they got Stan Freberg, and they did the lines, and he was a little, I think, according to Earl, like, the way they had the animation is they kind of had the lines read a little fast. So Stan really wasn't able to, like, play with the characters very much, like, here's the lines, read them. We need to get this done now. So they record Stan, got the lines, and it's not until the orchestral mix where until executives are like, hey, we're not so sure about the voice for the dad. They weren't so sure about Stan Freberg
in this, which is ballsy.
It's pretty ballsy. It's like,
I mean, you know that he's like been working with this unit for 50 years, right?
Yeah, so they're like, okay, well, who should we get? And who they got was, again, like, also someone who worked with the Looney Tunes around this time, D. Bradley Baker.
Okay.
Who, recent voice actor of Daffy Duck around this time from Space Jam. So they're like, here, voice the coyote. And essentially what Earl wrote was, they did the recording, they showed it to the executives, and they pretty much convinced them, like, hey, listen, no shame towards D. That's what Earl writes a lot in this section. Like, Bradley Baker's a really good voice actor, he's really good. But we also had to tell the executives, like, listen, Stan's better, it's a better take, let's go with Stan. And they went with Stan at the end.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Good.
So do you want to know why this show was never released publicly?
Because if you backmask one of the audio files, it says Satan's here and he's cool with all of this. No?
So.
No, okay.
The reason, it's a very simple answer. The reason, according to Earl, that it wasn't shown in theaters was during the length of production, Bob Daly and Terry Semel, the CEOs that were behind the project, left WB. Oh, I've heard this before.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, new guys come in, they're owing slant of projects, and yep, they spent extra money for the film. Yeah. Mm. Mm. Oh, man. Either it's 2000 or it's 2024. Executives are still going to fuck with Looney Tunes Productions.
Nothing changes.
Maybe CEOs should die.
Yeah, maybe they should.
I don't know, man. Maybe should. But anyways, the show did eventually get released.
Episode 176, I Radicalized Mark.
No, oh, man, it's like every time. It's like any, like, oh, what are you doing to? It's like, oh, hey, why wasn't this done? New people took over. Hey, why are the Looney Tunes going in 2004? The executives said they didn't want more Looney Tunes. Why is Space Jam New Legacy a thing? The executives. It's like,
yeah.
It's never, like, the only time we've had a bad creative story is, ironically enough, during the 2004 shorts that were made. That was the only case of, like, actually, the creative people weren't that good. That's the only instance. Every other time, they just get screwed over. Executives. Yeah, lots of fun. Okay. So,
Mark, do you remember our history with this short?
I don't. We have history with this cartoon?
Well, we have history in the fact that once we knew it existed, it was intriguing to both of us. Because this was one of those where, as when we were in school and we were really in the depths of our Looney Tunes hyperfixations, I remember you said, I think you saw this one online somewhere, and
makes sense.
And you were like, "Oh yeah, no, it's interesting. It's like, what if it's a baby Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoon?" And I'm like, "Well, is it like baby Looney Tunes?" And you're like, "Not really." And it was fascinating. And there was one gag that you explained to me that I was fascinated by even then. And just because I was picturing it. I'm like, how are they going to do this? Because you were saying, oh, they do the thing where they stop in midair for the Latin names.
Yeah.
And they pause the Roadrunner and he's in a little playpen thing. And I'm like, how are they going to do that? That sounds really silly. He's just going to be sitting there going, all right. And I remember I searched, I Googled a million times, that month or so, and I couldn't find it, because it's not like it is now where you can Google, like, hey, this cartoon is like, oh, here's all these different sources for it.
Yeah.
It was like 2004, 2005 online, and like, you know, you couldn't, like, things were in either like Shockwave form or like just... Flash. It was not what it was, and or not what it is now. And so for years, I was like, "What is this cartoon? What's going on here?" And this is the first time I actually got to watch it for this.
So let's get into the.
You're out of background. Oh, okay.
I'm out of background. I said it was going to be a lot.
Yeah, we spent like 30 minutes on it.
Yeah, man. A lot of information. So
for a little go beat.
Short begins. You wouldn't expect it. So we begin with a title sequence of the history of the Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote throughout the years. It goes back in time. And the one thing that I found kind of funny is that in the opening credits, there's like a dedication to Chuck Jones for making these cartoons.
Yeah.
And it's weird to see that and go, oh, wait, he was alive. I mean, he really saw this. It was like, oh, thank you, guys. Thank you.
Oh, so he's basically in the seat going, wait, do they think I'm dead? It reminds me. Brief Jordan real life anecdote for you. There was a funeral, an extended family funeral that I have family in New York, and so it was that family.
Right.
Yeah. And it was somebody that had died, and like, and he will be, and the priest obviously didn't know the family that much, and he was mourning this person, and he was going, and he will be you'll be joining his the other people that have died in the last couple of years and as well as his nephew or something, Warren, and referring to our Uncle Warren, and Uncle Warren was still alive. And so we all turned to Uncle Warren, and Uncle Warren goes, he's checking his pulse. So that's what I feel what happened to Chuck. Just Chuck going, huh?
Since we're doing funeral stories, can I give mine that was really weird?
Sure.
Okay. Because this ties in with the Looney Tunes. Stay with me on this one. So unfortunately, this year, I attended a funeral with a close family member. So we had the service, and we went to the cemetery for the burial. And I get out of the car. I'm like, okay, it's really cold. And then my uncle comes out of the car. And he is wearing like a winter like hat that has Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck in it from the end of Rapid Fire when they're like they're ready to go shoot Elmer. I just see that, and for a brief moment, I said, "Nice hat." It's just like, yeah, this is a very dour moment. Like, but like,
sure.
LinkedIn podcast, 900. Right. So the service happens. Everyone's sad. I walk back with my other family. And my uncle, Uncle Jason, goes, well, that's all, folks. And I literally said, like, don't say that.
Stop saying that.
Because I'm going, like, there's a time and a place for Looney Tunes to show up in our lives. We've each experienced this doing this show where, like, we're out in the world and there's some, like place you wouldn't expect. It's like, there's a Looney Tunes thing over there. Or, I'll be, like, sitting in a McDonald's in Maryland and then, like, I don't know, like the Space Jam theme song comes on. I'm like, okay, that's weird. But yeah, I'm at the saddest, most personal, one of the most saddest personal moments of my life. And it's fucking Looney Tunes connections.
That's all, folks. Yeah.
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 So yeah.
We've made it literally 2 seconds into the cartoon.
And yeah.
We've spent like 20 minutes on it.
Jeez. All right. So the cartoon actually begins.
It does?
With we go into the Cage E. Coyote's residence. As a little Wile E. Coyote is playing with a jack-in-the-box. Yeah. It opens, and it turns out that it's a Roadrunner head in a box. And Wiley's so happy that he gets a mallet and starts smashing the jack-in-the-box, which is very cute.
Raised his son right.
As we go over to KG Coyote, and it is Stan doing a voice. He tells Jeffrey, he's definitely doing a voice. It's like, well, son, I think it's time for you to learn our family's history. You know, why we chase Roadrunners? And while he's about to talk, he's like, no, son, don't speak.
Yeah, don't speak until you caught a Roadrunner. I don't think we needed this bit of Wile E. Coyote lore, but. You know, you do you.
So we then get into the car. So again, yes, we get in the cartoon. And and the first gag we have here, well, actually, the meetup between Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, because this is the moment that I talked about like 15 years ago. So he sees the Roadrunner, and you get this chase, and it pauses, and he goes, you know, Coyote, Porus Schnuckius.
Yeah.
And the Roadrunner is Marsilius Baby Fetidius Tastius.
Yeah.
And I do love the moment where Wiley's up in the air, then he looks down, falls on the letters. I love
that too, because he doesn't know how the freeze frame goes yet.
Yeah.
No, it's already, you get the tone of this, because it's not really, for the most part, it isn't really like doing a full... This is what we're getting at with this, is it's different from the tone of Baby Looney Tunes, because it's not meant for toddlers. It's meant for everybody. It just so happens that they're babies.
Yeah.
Which is, I would have preferred a little bit from Baby Looney Tunes.
A lot of this honestly is just like kiddified versions of gags you would see in a Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
Absolutely. I'm fine with that.
Some gags we've actually just seen, which I'll point out when we get them. Though I do have to say, I didn't really like the first gag that much, which is just simply Wile E. Opening up a door. He opens it with his baby keys. It's explosives.
Yeah.
He walks over with the explosives, and then it just blows up.
Yeah. You're not even going to do anything with the explosives?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I could go a little more into it.
Again, as you were saying, a lot of these gags are like younger variations of gags from actual Wile E. Coyote cartoons. Like the badger trap gag is definitely a reference to the tiger trap or tiger pit gag from the 50s.
Yeah. And again, it's like those gags, except the Warner Division got way more money because the the desert in this short looks really good. The shading on Wile E. Coyote looks really good. The detail. When we see the badger come out of the shadows, it looks like a creature that could have been in, I'm going to say Pagemaster. I'm going to guess with a movie that would have been around this time that has a similar feel.
Yeah.
And, Dizzy got the Roadrunner. He's carrying it. Here's the growling. He shakes the container. Just be like, I go to an arm, opens it. Like, looks over, sees the badger, gets pulled in, and then,
it's a simple gag. He sets a badger trap and traps a badger. What did you expect?
So the next gag here is Wiley's first payment to Acme, except it's Acme Jr.
I love that, Acme Jr.
That's really good.
Start him early.
Acme or us.
Oh my God.
Could have been. So what I love about this is, okay, he needs a stretchable rubber band. There's always a stretchable rubber band during Wile E. Coyote cartoons. What's the kid version of that? A Stretch Armstrong, essentially.
Yes. It's called a Stretch Armstrong doll.
Wow, he stretches.
Yeah. I don't know if this caught you as much as it caught me, Mark, but why does the Stretch Armstrong doll have such a defined ass? There's not a lot of detail on the rest of him as Wile E. holds him, but there is detail on that ass.
So what you're saying, Jordan, is that our criticisms from our first Looney Tunes cartoons episode about there being too many butt jokes... It's just them continuing the legacy laid down by Spike Brandt.
Absolutely. You know, the butt jokes commence.
Yeah.
Sure.
So.
But I liked where this went.
Yes. So he sets up this rubber band bit between two cacti. And it's very much because he tests it. Like he runs towards it, speeds towards it to make sure it stretches good. And it does, and I didn't see it coming, just looking over, testing, and then, wham! Cacti just hits him on both sides.
I didn't see it coming either, and I loved
it. Cacti got me. So good.
I loved it. Oh, my God.
That really fit. That fits a Y Coyote cartoon.
Yeah. It's oh my.
So here we get, again, another similarly placed gag from previous Y Coyote cartoons, which is Y Coyote has a weapon that could take out the Roadrunner, but the weapon is stuck and or doesn't work.
Yes.
From the makers of the Steel Wall, essentially.
Yeah, this is a spring-loaded glove. And it's simple, but the timing is just really good here.
So next one we have here is, it feels like a callback to Guided Muscle.
Yes!
Where he's looking at the Roadrunner from across a great distance. And I don't know what he uses to try to jump over, right? What exactly happened here?
I
didn't write that down, but I know there's like a Guided Muscle as homage in this moment.
Yeah, it's the cliffs, right, or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Like I don't know what gets him to the ability to fly off the cliff, but he does. He tries it, and he falls on a second cliff that's right underneath him.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, we just saw that.
But I love the transition gag here where he falls off the cliff pulling the translation to the next scene. Him.
Yes. Yes. Which even the cartoon agrees. That Guided Muscle is a really good Y Coyote cartoon.
Oh, it's a fact.
That's literally a whole tribute to it.
Yeah. Also, speaking of tribute, I love the music in this cartoon. It's very reminiscent of the old school cartoons. It's like a more souped up, modernized version of the 50s themes.
Richard Stone, man, he had that ability. That's the whole reason they hired him.
Yeah.
So we then get this last gag here, where Wily invests in toy rockets filled up with bottled water. They're very jazzed up, and he's going to use it to be on the same speed as the Roadrunner. And at first, it becomes successful. You know, he lets it go. She's out of the Roadrunner. He holds on to one of the wheels from the playpen.
Yeah.
And then he loses the rockets, and he's just being chased. The Roadrunner is just pulling him throughout the desert, essentially. Yeah. Goes through rocks and cactus and this felt, they nailed it. This is a great Y Coyote toned gag. And then the bridge is out.
Yeah.
She gets thrown through the bridge is outside and just falls. And again, fantastic expression work on Baby Wily throughout this cartoon, but especially here. A great drop down face as he falls. And then we got back to the father. And he has a last line, which is, he's little with binoculars, which, I get it, he has to do it for himself. But it's like, okay, sure. He just loves with binoculars. He goes like,
he's a good boy, but I don't think he's going to be talking for a long time.
Now, I think this should go without saying, considering what we know of the Y Coyote character and of the movie that's in limbo right now. Where does this continuity put the Wile E. Coyote Super Genius Bugs Bunny cartoons in?
I have no idea, and I shouldn't really be worrying about it.
Oh yeah, no, but it just sounds like, he does speak in that. Whatever. So, a lot of gags here go toe-to-toe with the classics, given it's absolutely based on the classics. But they change up enough of it where this is a tribute. This is full-blown, a big tribute to the Y Coyote cartoons made by people who really care about them.
Absolutely.
Frankly, you could argue that this tribute to Y Coyote is better than Jones's own attempts around this time.
Yeah, hate to say it, but maybe
that must have been. That's been. And again, it was like
Earl did not write if Chuck saw this cartoon, but I had to guess if I'm Chuck don't watch this cartoon going,
that's pretty good.
Yeah. You totally ruined me off, but
You know, it's fine.
Yeah. One little detail I forgot. When the father is talking about all these, because he's like he's an award winning runner catcher, so all these medals. I think there's a reference to Michael Maltese in the medals, but there's also a photograph of Chuck Jones with this guy with Wile E. Coyote essentially.
Yeah,
which is nice. And
with the Maltese Falcon in the back as well. Yeah.
Oh, okay. There, yeah. Okay, that explains it. Yeah, so they're full-blown, hey, we love these cartoons. Here's our dedication to them. And it does it so well. Also, it doesn't hurt that this is fantastically animated and looks like a goddamn movie. dude, I told you this. We're prepping this episode, right? We're like, okay, we're going to prep this Wile E. Coyote episode at a time where we don't know a Wile E. Coyote movie is happening. And then I watch this gorgeously animated 2D Wile E. Coyote cartoon. I'm like, damn it, I just want the movie more now.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Hopefully we get it soon enough, man. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm a little lower than you are on this. I thought it did a fine enough job. Good gags. Some others that were maybe a bit too simple or easy. Some that really got me. Some that were really impressive. Others that weren't. I honestly think also it maybe tied itself in too much of a bow at the end with bringing a lot of the other gags back. But you can't really blame it. Excellent animation. Excellent music. I think this is still a good cartoon that maybe was a few notches away from being truly great.
I'm going to give this animal rating a 4.5 out of 5 animals.
Okay. I'm actually going to give it a 3.5 out of 5 animals.
Okay. One thing I want to say, if they did release this in theaters, right, like for the public, the very end, that's all folks is written like a child draw, which is really cute, and they put the Baby Looney Tunes logo in there.
Yeah.
Baby Looney Tunes didn't happen until
02, 03.
Guys, did an episode, how do you not know? 2002. So 2 years. The whiplash that people would feel. Like, they hear, like, oh, Baby Looney Tunes. And they're like, oh, that Wile E. Coyote cartoon was a Baby Looney Tunes. That was really funny. And they're like, they put their kids in front of the TV. It's like, hey, let's watch Baby Looney Tunes. I think it's going to be really good. And it's just, okay. Things changed, clearly. But yeah. Really good stuff, though. This short was especially really good stuff.
No, I'm glad we finally watched this, you know? It was mostly worth it. So, the last one we have here today is only a couple of years later. It's Wizard of Ow, which was done by some of the people that did... It was supposed to coincide with Back in Action's release, but it wasn't released in theaters. It was mostly included on the DVD extras on that one. But it was released on November 1st, 2003, on that day, Taipei hosts the first ever gay pride parade in China. Around 1,000 people marched.
Oh, okay.
Good for Taipei.
That's nice.
The number one song in the U.S. was Baby Boy by Beyonce. Number one in the U.K. was Where is the Love by the Black Eyed Peas. I'd honestly give it to the U.K. there. Although number two in the U.K. was I Believe in a Thing Called Love by the Darkness.
Yeah. I think we covered those before.
Yeah, we did.
Didn't they all come out on that day, technically? The old four shorts?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been a while. But yeah. So, fun fact. I completely forgot that this was one of those shorts.
Yeah.
Because I remember from our coverage of the 04 Looney Tunes cartoons were, wow, is there no budget? And wow, did you piss off Looney Tunes voice actors? And wow, was the effort not worth it?
Wasn't great. This was directed by Brett Holland, written by Chris Kelly. Now, I'm not sure whether it's the same Chris Kelly that was working for Cartoon Network in this era, there's a lot of Chris Kellys. It could have been a completely different Chris Kelly. IMDb isn't sure. Wikipedia isn't sure. Nobody's sure. But it was definitely written by someone named Chris Kelly. But also, one of the, because they have the room, they have the big writer's room thing. And one of the people in this writer's room was Dan Povenmeyer.
Dan and John Vitti. So
yeah.
Phineas and Ferb writers, got Simpson writers, and yeah. And they're all given the assignments to write a Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
Featuring magic.
You know, big year, 2003 or whatever, for classic cartoon characters dealing with magical things.
Oh, yeah, the Magic Ring, right?
Got Tom and Jerry and the Magic Ring, which I remember liking.
Same. It's better than the 1992 movie, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So we get some... This is, I think, the only... For some reason, they actually went with these two animals as Latin names. They didn't do joke ones. They just gave us their Latin names.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
That's lame.
So the Roadrunner is the Geococcyx californius, and the coyote is Canis latrans, which, if that hasn't been taken by a furry by this point, I will be fucking shocked. Canis latrans. I don't have to ask you any questions. What's your deal? Well, my name is Canis latrans. Okay, you've said enough. I know your whole deal now. I know why you're in there. I know who's in there.
I'm sure the Wile E. Coyote fans, who will most certainly have something to say with this episode, will tell us if they met someone named...
Hey, I've got a buddy named Canis latrans. I'm sure you do.
I'm sure you do, buddy. Sure you do.
Sure. And again, not that there's anything wrong with that.
And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, we're very pro-trans on this show. I'm just making the joke because, you know, it's right there in the
letter. It's right there.
Yeah. So, yeah, the whole setup of this cartoon is that there's this
so
warring battle.
So we begin this Wile E. Coyote cartoon with two magical humans doing a battle over the cliffs of the desert.
It's like wizards fighting each other. And by the end of this, there's only a book and a small animal that Wile E. happens upon.
Yeah.
And it's a book of spells and things like that. And so he starts basically, you know, oh, what can I do with this? And the first one, he turns the little cat thing into a panther. And I like this gag where the panther immediately claws through Wile E and he sort of balloons downward in a little...
Hey, so my first issue with this cartoon is, I get it. We have to get to Wile E doing magic stuff because that's the whole point of this cartoon. But do you think there should have been a few more Wile E fails before we get to an actual magic thing done correctly? It's weird to me that Wile E just immediately nailed magic, right? Like, that's a little strange.
That didn't bother me. I'm fine with it, because the whole thing is that, like again, a lot of these, the thing is that, like, he's successful at making these work. It's just the tricks don't happen as he planned, like, which is basically just goes back to the spirit of the Chuck Jones things. We're like, yes, maybe he is successful making these work. It's just not like, you know, they work too well or they don't work the way he wants. There's admittedly a lot of gags I skipped through here.
You skipped over the broom gag that went on for 5 minutes?
Well, yeah, I skipped over most of it because it went on for 5 minutes, but it didn't, like, it kept going, teasing it's going to go someplace cool. Like, it goes into, like, the stars, and I thought, oh, Marvin's going to show up, but no. And, like, you know, he goes far enough, and the broom cracks out, and it starts drumming to the earth. I did like the bit where he calls Acme's service line, and you hear Tress McNeil and waiting music going, your call is very important to us, as the cell phone burns up.
Okay, well, okay, two things. One, I liked him getting hit by asteroids.
Yeah.
I do think it could have gone, like, and then a meteor shower happens and it gets pelted and then, I don't know. But also, I think what would have been a little more funnier is just, like, it's on customer service, just like, hey, you've reached Acme customer service, please. As it's burning, I just hear,
Yeah, that would have been really funny. And yeah, all of that gets him right back down to Earth, and all of that for a very easy Roadrunner scares him off the cliff gag?
Yeah, that's the weird, that's the strange thing. It kind of just, yeah.
All right. Waste my time. Speaking of things that waste my time, they have him like have this spell that enlarges things, and all he does is enlarge his head. And they don't even go anywhere with that.
Were they scared of doing the one where Roadrunner got big?
Yeah, I think maybe.
Was that it?
Or they were scared at exciting the furries with the inflation fetishes.
It's called giganticism.
What? Giganticism? No!
No?
We were thinking two very different, weird, fucked up things.
Yes, yes.
Yours is a medical condition. Mine is just blowing shit up. If you or someone you know someone with named Canis Latrans who's into this shit, again, quarrel with your morals in the late dead of night when you have to edit this back.
That's all right, man.
I can't believe that's like our most successful TikTok, by the way. That's insane to me.
That's why we have a
TikTok. I put effort into those things, and it's the one that's like, ha, it's like, really? That's the one? Okay, fine. It's why it's there for some reason, as you say at the end of every episode. Okay.
Yeah, you know, so, why not? Crystal ball gag next?
Yeah, and I didn't get it.
I didn't get it either. Because the whole thing
I didn't get it.
Is that Wily basically sets up a bomb and paints it like a crystal ball, and because, you know, Roadrunner's with the gag, the crystal ball actually works for him, and he sees the future of Wily getting Wily exploding. And because of this, the bomb just sort of rolls over to Wily and it explodes. We don't explain how it got there or how it got off that table or if Roadrunner did it.
How did it become real?
Because you know, it's the same thing as painting the tunnel on the side of the rock and then a train coming out of it. It's the same idea as that.
But that's funny.
This could have been worse.
But that's funny and makes sense in a cartoonish sort of way.
And this doesn't?
This is just... eh. I don't know. It was the one gag in this.
It's not all the way there. I get it. There's pieces of it that should be there that aren't. But of it, I think, works than I think you think.
All right.
More fun with books and articles. The page in this book that just says how to levitate things, not objects, things. What do I want to levitate? Things.
Things. I mean, listen, children.
Children, listen to us for good advice.
Kids, take it from Jorn. Instead of saying I'm going to hurt you, just say, I'm going to levitate things at you.
I'm going to levitate things at you.
Levitate things.
You remember that story. I didn't. I didn't remember. I told that on the show.
Yeah, I did.
Very good. I'm going to levitate things at you. I'm not going to tell you which things, but I'm sure they're going to be something.
It just becomes the ending of Matilda.
Yeah.
Just Hansel's chipper on there.
So this is another one that's really drawn out. Because the boulder is just stuck there, and he tries everything he tries. It's not going to crash down. Everything you think is going to make it crash down doesn't. And then he just walks away, and the boulder follows, then crashes into him.
And this is okay. So this is the one gag that I was reminded of a earlier White Coney gag, which as he was doing this, I was just saying to myself, in heaven's name, what am I doing?
Yes, exactly.
In heaven's name, what am I doing? Yeah. And I was kind of like waiting for that for some reason. I was like, oh, come on, guys. This is so obvious. You gotta at least make reference to it. Like, nope. He just walks away and hits him. It's like, oh, okay. All right, fine.
Yeah, no, that was a decent enough thing. What's this last one? He's flying with something, right?
So, you know, we know how typical last Y Coyote gags go. You know, he lights up a big elaborate trap, or he paints a beautiful painting that becomes real, or you know, calls upon a Pegasus.
Yeah. Why not?
Typical Y Coyote cartoon stuff.
I mean, there were some good takes in this one because I liked where he's about to crash into a train, and he's about to crash into the train car with all the fluffy pillows and soft things, and he instead crashes into the one with the snakes, where it just says 1,000 deadly snakes.
Okay.
And then, and then the scorpions, right?
Yeah, the scorpions show up.
And then educational television. Oh, wait, no. That's an argument altogether.
And then it reveals that Roadrunner is the one who's been futzing with the Book of Magic spells. And so that's at least interesting. A little frenzied, but interesting.
Yeah, it's returned a mailbox to a female Roadrunner, and they walk on the walk off into the distance.
Yeah, you know, sure, fine. Wizard of Vow tried a lot. With a full plot and a hook. Not all the gags worked. The animation was not as good as usual. It didn't seem like it warranted its own existence. There were some fun moments, but not enough of them.
I actually thought this was the closest to a competently made Looney Tunes short from this crew.
Yeah.
I remember the animation, like specifically the Bugs Bunny one, the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas one. I remember that being like really like very stiff and borderline Family Guy model sheet in some way. This, when Wily's doing reactions or we cut to the camera of Wily and he's moving, it is good. Like it's not high tier, but compared to what I'm used to around this time, it's a little more fluid than what they did at that time.
Yeah.
The gag work was pretty good. A few, I did write down like what to a lot of my notes during this, because like, what, really? Fine.
Yeah. Sure.
Not terrible, but like if I had to say, this is probably the best of the 04 era, but still like decent enough. Yeah.
I'm only giving it a 3 out of 5, but this was better than I would have thought.
I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5.
And that's fair. Well, today, I was the harsh one. Wow.
Yeah.
So let's see if you guys have anything to say about these three Wile E. Coyote shorts, and if any of you are somehow named Canis Latrams. All right. Frequent commenter and friend of the show, Brandon, going by BD Green on his Twitter these days, at PetProjects2011, says, Little Go Peep is okay, but half the gags are rehashed from previous shorts. For example, the Jack in the Box gag plays out the same way as the Metal Shield gag from Stop, Look, and Hasten. I wouldn't say they're copied from previous shorts. I think there's some of the ideas are maybe taken from them, but not the full gags top to bottom. I think there's enough variation to set them apart.
To quote Tenacious D, this is not the greatest short ever made. It is a tribute.
It is merely a tribute, yes. And so I get what they were trying to do. And I didn't need complete authenticity, especially if this is an origin story. So, yeah, I it's a valid point, though.
All right, we have a comment here from David Germain at D_M_G_Daffy, who, very quick thoughts, Guided Muscle, a great classic, Little Go Beep, a delightful homage. Wizard of Ow, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't love that one either.
Pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. Guided Muscle is a classic. Okay. Kenny McCormick at Kenny MC and a bunch of numbers says, Guided Muscle, hilarious ending even if it breaks the rules. Okay. The thing is that the rules that Chuck Jones set, Even if he set them, he doesn't have to adhere to them all the time. And so, like, you know, we don't need to be taking cartoons to task because they don't 100% fall in line with the rules that he set up. Like, if somebody else broke them, fine, but, you know, it's him. Little Go Beep, he says, was my original favorite coyote cartoon, but I replaced it with Chariots of Fur. Chariots of Fur is also very good, so you have good taste there. Little Go Beep we liked. Like David, he's also very blunt on Wizard of Ow. I don't want to be harsh, but not good. Yeah, it's not.
All right, I also have... Okay, so this isn't much a comment, but it's a photo. Because, like, we always say on this show, you know, watch the cartoons with us. We really like when everyone's, like, watching the cartoons with us. Yes. So it's a nice communal effort. And we did get a photo from Jason Linder at NoVacancy_comic, who they're watching a Little Go Beep off of the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote Looney Tunes Superstars series, which is a DVD collection of Looney Tunes cartoons. Known best for having... You know, it's so weird that set, because on one hand, yes, it's a nice affordable way to have a bunch of shorts, one character,
but also that was the set that like stretched out some Looney Tunes cartoons to make them like fit 16:9 TVs, which is really stupid. But yeah, so they posted a photo of themselves watching Little Gold Peep on their TV, which is awesome.
We like that kind of commitment, you know? Yeah, if our podcast encourages people to watch more cartoons along with us or thanks to us, then we've done something right.
All right, and we have a very brief factoid over on the Instagram from AJGudino44. The composer of Wizard of Owl, because in our 04 episode, a lot of the shorts in that were done by Walter Murphy. The Family Guy's Seth MacFarlane and Family Guy's go-to composer. That's also kind of why we're like, these feel like Family Guy episodes, because it's by the same guy.
Yeah.
Apparently, Wizard of Owl was conducted by John Frizzle. So yeah, that's some interesting.
Yeah.
No relation to Mrs. Frizzle.
No, of course. All right, and we have a comment from one of our patrons, Judy on the Patreon, says, just watched Little Go Beep and Wizard of Owl. The idea of Coyote trying to catch the Roadrunner since he was a baby because his dad told him to makes me kind of sad. This raises so many questions. If his dad told him not to speak until he catches him, then why does he speak when trying to catch bugs? That was what we brought up. Because
right.
We was like, is that a different kind of thing? It's only in accordance to Roadrunners. So maybe if it's bugs, then it's okay. She continues, does this mean Wiley has gone through years of pain and torment just to impress his dad? Can we all relate?
Well, who hasn't? Who hasn't?
And how much therapy does Wiley need? The answer is a lot that she says there.
Yeah,
I think that the more you think about this, the more the harder to think about it gets. She also says, and this is an unpopular opinion given a lot of the comments we've already read out, The Wizard of Owl is a bit funnier. My favorite gags were Wiley getting sliced into a paper lamp, Roadrunner sounding like a truck horn, the crystal ball gag. Yeah, there were pieces of that one that were pretty good. I will say, though, I am a bit disappointed it had nothing to do with Wizard of Oz like I was expecting, but still a good cartoon. Yeah, that's a bit of a false advertising.
Yeah. Like I think the closest they got, I think, was the broom.
Yeah.
But even then, they didn't really do anything with it, so. Very much a case of like, okay, well, it sounds like it could have been a Wile E. Coyote cartoon from the 50s. And it's like, yeah, kind of, sort of, maybe not.
Yeah.
But yeah. Thank you so much, everyone, for your comments this week.
Yes, thank you all. Before we get to what we're covering next week, I would like to take this opportunity to thank our Patreon subscribers. That's right, we have a Patreon. If you didn't know about it, you know now. On Patreon, you can subscribe to That's Not Quite All Folks and get plenty of goodies, such as commentaries, bonus material, full uncut episode logs, and lots of fun stuff that you will get the opportunity to have at a $1 level or a $5 level. And I would just like to thank our current patrons, including Andrew, Triscrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the person, not the drink, my cousin Neil, and Judy M., for giving to this wonderful podcast. And if you'd like to be a part of that, go to patreon.com/TNQAF. Trust me, it'll be worth it. So the next one, because we have a new Collector's Choice Blu-ray coming out very soon.
Yes. Yes.
We are doing what we usually do and disrupting our schedule in order to give you three cartoons for it.
Yes.
So apologies to Bugs Bunny Builders. We ran out of time.
Listen.
It's funny. Okay, it's
Folks, literally what happened was, you know, they asked Collector's Choice Volume 3. We're like, hell yeah, here are the shorts. Hell yeah. It's coming out March 12th. Cool. I go on the podcast doc. I see we had a Bugs Bunny Builder episode slated. So I message Jarn like, hey. I swear.
I'm like, whatever you schedule it for next is going to be when they do Collector's Choice 4. So keep putting it places so we get more.
So, you know what? Bugs Bunny Builder fans will let you know this.
Don't say that. It's something else is going to happen. It's going to get moved.
Anywho's. So, the shorts that we are covering next week that are going to be in Lean to Collector's Choice Volume 3 are Egghead Rides Again.
Okay.
Punch Trunk.
Okay.
And War and Pieces. Another Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
Wow, all right.
Yeah, it's another Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, man.
So maybe by then some more Coyote versus Acting news will come out.
Wouldn't that be something?
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. It'd be a miracle at this point.
Yeah, stay tuned next week for another one of our Looney Tunes podcast supports a new Looney Tunes home media product because people should be buying and supporting Looney Tunes goods.
Absolutely.
According to George and Jerry, the Cutter's Choice volumes were their best sellers last year. So
yeah, and we talk about them all the time. So like, you know, anything we can do to keep things keep discs moving and you know,
keep that streak going, man. All right, so that is the end of this week's episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow us at that_Looney, both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. We have a YouTube channel where we post plenty of clips from our show, and we also post shorts of them, which we also put on our TikTok, which we have for some reason. And now we know the reason, which is to confuse Mark. You can also support the show on Patreon at www.patreon.com/TNQAF.
All right, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and whether you enjoy dressing up like a wolf or you're trans, we enjoy having you here. Or if you're someone else that isn't one of those things, we enjoy having you here. Good night.